Descending from atop the highest mountains of pop culture and delivering the knowledge of media you seek, this is the Geek Peek Podcast. Hello and welcome back to the Geek Peek Podcast, the pinnacle of all pop culture knowledge, news, and recommendations. Today we're going to be talking about some of the hottest summer blockbusters ever conceived by the brilliant Steven Spielberg. We'll also be touching on some of the highlights of the Xbox reveal stream and some awesome new anime shorts that have recently been released on YouTube. My name is Brandon Lanis and I'm joined today by my co-hosts Chris Melvin and Trent Sherrod. How are you boys doing?
Hey, what's up, Brandon? Trent, how you fellas doing?
Doing lovely.
I miss your beautiful voices, and I am happy to be here having a drink with y'all and chatting all things that are good.
Always the best part of the week.
For sure. I had a great time recording Time last week, About Time. If you have not checked that episode out, highly recommend it. We had a good conversation about time travel.
Twas fun.
Yeah, that was easily one of my favorites we've done so far.
Yeah, that was a good time. I will say, so since we're doing a episode in honor of the summer of Spielberg, I have got Indiana Jones Temple of Doom on while we're recording this. I'm watching Indy hang out with, what's the little kid that follows him around with the hat?
Short round.
He's like chatting with him right now, and the elephant's chilling next to the campfire. He just flipped like a coin towards him.
Dr. Jones, I love this movie
so much. Dr. Jones. So yeah, full disclosure, I may just randomly be talking about Temple of Doom as we watch through this.
I'm kind
of
joining you there. I got Jaws in the background right now. Whew. One of my favorites by Spielberg.
Yes.
I do not have anything on in the background. I am totally dedicated to this podcast, and it has my full attention.
Respect.
Oh, man. Okay, so Brandon, tell me what you're drinking on.
Today, I'm drinking on a New Belgium Voodoo Ranger 1985 IPA. So it's a nice little murky yellow color to the beer. It's very citrusy and very bitter at first, but it kind of has a little sweet aftertaste, so I'm really enjoying this one.
I've had the normal Voodoo Ranger. Mm-hmm. Trent, have you had that one?
I've had like almost all of them. When I've had several of their variety packs, I really like that beer.
Yeah,
the 1985, is it like more bitter, I guess?
It's definitely more bitter, in my opinion. The reason this one really stuck out to me was when I saw the can. It has the very, like, of course, it's 1985, so it has the very 80s vibrant aesthetic to it. It's got the Voodoo Ranger skeleton in like with, like, shutter shades on.
The best aesthetic.
Yeah. He's got, like, shutter shades on. He's got his windbreaker with cobras on it. It's a badass-looking can.
Yeah, I'm going to probably go pick that up purely based on the can look. So, would you recommend this beer, you say? You tell people to go.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, hell yeah. It's very tasty.
All right. Well, I'm going to jump ahead of you, Trent, and talk about what I'm drinking. I'm kind of happy about this. It's Wild Turkey Long Branch. So it's a Kentucky straight bourbon whiskey, oak and Texas mesquite charcoal refined. And woo, Wild Turkey small batch. I didn't even know that was a thing. The only Wild Turkey I've ever had has been like, I think, pretty cheap bourbon or whiskey.
I was about to say, when you say Wild Turkey, that gets my Texas blood tingling. Love me some Wild Turkey.
The amount of T noises there. Texas blood tingling.
Yeehaw.
I love it. I love it. Yeah, this, it's definitely more of a bold bourbon. It's got a bit of a kick. Not as much as the double cast Knob Creek that I had a few
the one
weeks
that
back.
Kicks like a mule.
Yeah, that out of all of them so far for the bourbons that I've reviewed on this show, that has definitely been the one that's like, okay, if you want to like definitely feel every time you sip it, that's the one to do it. But I will say this Long Branch is really good. It's a change up from, say, the ginger bourbon that I had last week. Would highly recommend it. 43% alcohol by volume, really clean looking bottle. Again, it kind of looks like a Prohibition era, like bootlegger bottle. So check it out. It's a nice top end version of Wild Turkey, which I did not know existed. Shout out to my girlfriend for picking it up for me.
Thanks, Emily. I am drinking Bullet Bourbon. I've done this one before, but I have a 1.75 liter bottle. It's giant and it's left over from the bachelor party.
So there's nothing wrong with drinking it again. That's a good one.
Oh, it's good. And I was going to drink this PBR. Yes, that's Pabst Blue Ribbon white whiskey. A buddy of mine brought it over the other day as a joke.
Oh my God.
You want to talk about kicking in the face like a mule? It's not in a good way. It is straight hot garbage.
Absolutely miserable. Ugh. And because of that, you should definitely be talking about that one next week.
I wanted to this week because it's so funny, but I just couldn't bring myself to drink it. I'm not going to lie to you guys. I'm not going to say, oh yeah, I'm drinking this. I'm going to drink what I'm talking about. I just really don't want to drink that. It's like Everclear that tastes like whiskey.
How is it related to Pabst?
I don't know. I mean, it's got the Pabst Blue Ribbon logo with like the
just
with
the actual tasting, blue ribbon.
Yeah.
Hey, be easy on PBR. That's like one of my go-tos if I'm trying to drink cheap out. You know what I'm saying?
This is true. I honestly hate on it because I drink it. So
it is a glass bottle that's $10. I will give them this. The bottle looks nice. It does look nice. It looks cool. But I mean, I don't understand. Like, I've never even seen a glass bottle for $10.
Yeah, I was gonna say, you're telling me there's a $10 glass bottle PBR whiskey?
Yeah, it's otherworldly. It's otherworldly. It's insane.
Yeah, that fell through. That's like the Mandela effect, where like something, we all have like a shared memory of that not existing, and now it's in our reality, and we can't get rid of it.
Oh man. So on that note, let's go ahead and skip over to the news. I'm not drinking shit whiskey. I'm drinking some good Bullet Bourbon.
Good moves. Yeah, Bullet's great.
So let's get into it. We just recently had the Xbox reveal stream earlier this week, and they were showing off some of the games that are going to be launched with the system coming in the holiday season. What were the big ones for you guys? Because for me, easily, I mean, of course, Halo Infinite. And the new teaser for Fable.
I've never been a huge Fable guy, but you know me, like, hands down, best game Xbox has ever made, in my opinion, has been Halo. So the fact that they're making a Halo Infinite, I didn't even play Halo 5 because I kind of thought it looked like trash.
It wasn't great.
But I will say, I would consider playing Infinite. It looks a little bit more interesting. Seems like there's a little more hype.
The gameplay looks really fluid. I actually really like what they've done with it. Like, they showed off the little grappling thing you can use to get some high ground advantages. It's really sweet. The one thing I wish they would have showed off a little bit more is the multiplayer.
Agreed. That's going to be what makes or breaks it, because at this point, like, I'm divested from the campaign of Halo because I skipped 5. So if you're going to continue on that story, that can't be what carries it. It's got to be strong multiplayer like the original Halo games, which we all know and love.
Not all of us.
Mikey G. Dude, honestly.
You don't want to hear my opinion on Xbox. I'll just bring it all down.
I was going to say, you're such a PlayStation fanboy.
Let's talk about
I think that actually
then.
Is. Yeah, I was going to say, that's a perfect transition. Guess what just came out on PlayStation that we were talking about on the show a few weeks ago?
Ghost of
no.
I was going with something completely different there.
We're going with Cuphead. So now there's no excuse not to play it. It's on the PlayStation. It's on every single
I'm gonna play
possibly play it on now, it seems like.
dude.
Yeah, I'm going to play it. It looks fun. I looked at the trailer and you were spot on with what you said last week or a couple weeks ago about it looking very Steamboat Willie in terms of the art style.
Oh, for sure.
It's a classic scroller type game. It looks fun. I'm going to pick it up. I think it's like $20 on the PlayStation Network.
Yeah, dude, that's
so
a
hard. Just be prepared.
It is.
Is it like hard?
Migraine inducing hard. So
it's like Dark Souls, dude.
Any game that's hard nowadays is instantly Dark Souls like.
I don't know. I think classic Mario is pretty fucking hard. Not gonna
lie. Right, that's fair.
That's honestly, I agree with you. I'm just really bad at side scrollers, so yeah.
So what I was gonna mention, we'll go ahead and talk about it since my poor interpretation of a Japanese accent was interrupted. Ghost of Tsushima. I bought it, guys. I beat Last of Us 2. Chris is on his way to beating Last of Us 2. We're gonna drop that final recap episode for you guys sometime next week. But directly after that, I was like, I gotta get my fix. I gotta have another really good story driven game. And
how is it? Please let me know it's good.
It is. I've gotten like 2 hours into it. It is beautiful and breathtaking. The game is massive, first of all. You start off and it's very linear, just getting through the initial conflict. But then it opens up and you have all different kind of missions that you can do. So very open world sandbox. And I just find myself riding around on my horse, climbing up to the peaks of mountains, running through everything. Every time that you're walking around, it seems like there's petals of flowers, like in old Japanese art, just flowing around you. It's incredible.
I'm a huge fan of the aesthetic just from like all the pictures and like gameplay and stuff I've seen from that game. It's visually so, so appealing. Mm-hmm.
I haven't
online in some articles comparing it to Breath of the Wild and Red Dead Redemption 2. And that alone is enough to get me very interested in it because those are some of my favorite games to have come out in the past few years. If not, I mean, Red Dead Redemption 2 and Breath of the Wild, I would say are easily up in like some of my top games of all time. They're just incredible. And to compare something to those, that puts it on a pedestal for me. So I'm going to have to really check this one out.
I mean, Trent, while you were describing the game, I was getting mad Red Dead vibes. And I know you haven't played that one yet, but like very much like, okay, I'm going to the top of this cliff to just like chill and see what's going on up here. Mm-hmm.
And I haven't read any reviews. I don't like to do that, but I trust Sucker Punch Games. They made some of my childhood favorites. Sly Cooper. There's a
Jack and Daxter.
No, that's Naughty Dog. You don't test me. Infamous. Infamous was cool.
Infamous is such a cool game.
Yeah, for anybody that hasn't played it, you basically get to choose a light or dark path, and your actions will power up certain different powers, and you kind of become like a mutant with with electric powers. And then, I was going to say Spider-Man, but I'm sorry, that's Insomniac Games. So yeah, they have a good track record. I have a very strong feeling this game is going to be amazing.
All right.
Yeah, I would like to play it a lot, but I will say Ghost of Tsushima.
Yeah.
Have you done the black and white mode at all, Trent?
No, I didn't. And there was an option to do it in Japanese as well with English subtitles.
Can you switch it back and forth at will?
Yeah, yes, you can.
That's fucking awesome. I love it. I'm probably gonna pick it up.
Game changer. Yeah, I want that so bad. I need to beat The Last of Us before I buy another game though. Anyways, so that's awesome. I'm really excited to play that one. Thanks for the heads up, Trent.
Yeah. Chris, you want to talk real quick about Mandalorian and some Emmy? Go ahead.
I do. I just want to say we are very much here at the Geek Peak. We are highly, highly committed to bringing you all of the updates on all of the award shows, but we will not watch 1 second of any of those award shows, no matter what. Like, you cannot pay us enough money. We're not getting paid anything, but you cannot pay us enough money to go and watch those award shows. Like, even if you wanted to pay us, we're not doing it. I'm saying we will give you all of the updates the day after the award shows. We don't even know when they happen.
We're going to give you a quick Google search so that you don't have to do it yourself.
Exactly. And that's what the Geek Peaks is about right there, because we're not sitting through those things. But back to our original point, The Mandalorian got nominated for Best Drama Emmy. And then it also netted, I believe it was 14 other nominations. So it had 15 total, but 15 nominations for a freaking Star Wars show on Disney Plus, dude. It deserved Hell yeah.
It. I That's mean, what I'm talking about. You guys remember me talking about how they're going to make a new Disney Star Wars show every quarter for like the next, I don't know how many years. That is solely based off of the success of The Mandalorian. The success, the Mandalorian has been the most successful thing that they've done since probably
Rogue One. I would say.
Yeah. Maybe Force Awakens.
Yep.
You know?
Yeah. I'm happy that it's come through in a big way, and I'm happy that that's the benchmark of success now, is it has to be as good as The Mandalorian. Otherwise you've done it poorly.
Which Mandalorian is better than Rogue One and The Force Awakens, by the way. I hope that I was not trying to say that those two are better.
It's hard for me to say with Rogue One, because I'm a big Rogue One guy, but I do think The Mandalorian probably overall is better. I think you're right on that.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, so I'm pretty stoked to see how that pans out. I'll be interested to see if they, the crew over at The Mandalorian and Jon Favreau end up netting all 15 wins, or even half of that would be insane for, like I said, a Star Wars TV show.
Yeah.
But I'm going to kick this over to Brandon. So Brandon sent us a couple videos in the chat when we were talking about our episode this week. And one of them was this entire anime. It was a Rick and Morty anime. And from there, I'll let you take it away, Brandon.
Yeah. So they released a short 8.5 minute anime Rick and Morty episode. It kind of goes into like how memories form our pasts, and they kind of like take a time. It's kind of like how they use time in theirs, because they never like to touch like time travel and stuff. So, and they show like evil Morty coming in trying to eradicate all the other Mortys and all the Ricks that are kind of stepping out of line, and it almost to me kind of came off as concretely saying that Ricks and Mortys are the same person at the end of it. I don't know. It's kind of weird, hard to translate. What do you guys think about it, though?
After I watched it, I sent this in the group chat to you guys. I'm like, wait, does that mean that Morty eventually becomes Rick? Because basically, Morty finds his Rick in the episode, and his Rick says, "Drink this potion. After I leave, we'll have more and more adventures forever together." Rick goes and does his thing, and I think he dies. I can't remember exactly what happens. He traps Morty in this impenetrable glass box. And at the very end of the episode, Jerry's like just doing some bullshit. And at the very end of the episode,
he calls Jerry the phone that's on in the encased apartment where the Morty was. But Rick picks up and saying that Morty was born.
Yeah, he's like, "Rick, where are you? Your grandson was born. His name's Morty." And then, but it's in the box that Morty was in, and it shows the potion that Morty drank, but it's Rick that picks up the phone.
Mm-hmm.
So I was like, what in the hell?
This was kind of like a big fan theory for a long time, honestly. Like people saying that Morty will eventually become Rick, and that's how it always has been. But it's never been confirmed up until really this, which is kind of interesting. And even this, I mean, this isn't an official episode necessarily, but
yeah, we don't even know if this is canon or not.
Yeah,
it's definitely worth watching. It is all in Japanese, though, which is kind of funny.
Yeah, it's cool.
It was hard to, one thing I will say, it was hard to watch it because I'm so used to the cadences of Rick and Morty's voice and also just their voice acting. So to hear it, not only in a different tone and accent, but just not hear those classic Rick and Morty cadences and stuttering and everything. It was odd.
That's more what I mean when I say it was funny.
Well, the Rick in this was a lot more lighthearted and friendly too compared to normal Rick.
Mm-hmm.
For sure. Well, yeah, I enjoyed watching it. Definitely check it out. It's called Rick and Morty versus Genocider. 8.5 minutes. Get on YouTube. Get after it. On the anime train, Brandon hit us with what I compared to as Naruto in some aspects. I feel like it's very similar.
Absolutely.
Hit us with it.
So Rick and Morty anime was cool and all, but I think the best anime to come out in the past decade came onto YouTube earlier this week. And it's the SpongeBob anime, which was made by Narmak on YouTube. So he's been making, like, a, in quotations, official SpongeBob like anime openings for the past 2 years now. He's done three of them and then like an ending song as well. And they've all been really high quality and have been trending on YouTube over the years and stuff. But just earlier this week, he came out with a fully fleshed out episode of an anime SpongeBob. And what I like about it the most is it uses every single trope of any shonen anime and just takes it to the next level. But it also has those SpongeBob references in there that you wouldn't really know unless you watched the show growing up, for example.
The first
Patrick.
Yeah. Patrick's hilarious.
with the he had like the straw or whatever in his mouth. I was cracking up. I'm sorry. What did you say, Trent?
I was just saying, just to give you guys an idea, like you have the classic Mr. Krabs being very greedy, but SpongeBob is making this really dramatic speech as he's walking out of the Krusty Krab about him being greedy and how he thought he was better. You have scenes where SpongeBob and Sandy are like getting it on, and Sandy is
I haven't even gotten that part.
Sandy is, well, that one of the openings. The first video. Yeah, it's from one of the openings. She is very Sailor Moonish. I'll just let you imagine what, you know.
Okay. But there are very big Naruto and Sasuke vibes coming off of SpongeBob and Squidward, respectively. And the animation is really well done. The voice acting is extremely well done in the actual episode. And even the fight scene's really cool. They did a great job animating it.
Yeah, it's fun. I liked it. I'm looking forward to more.
And I believe
I felt like SpongeBob and Squidward's relationship was very similar to Naruto and Sasuke.
Absolutely. I got those vibes majorly.
I was cracking up. So if you're a fan of Naruto, you're about to go crazy when you watch this. You're going to love it. It's
so
fun.
So check out Narmak's channel. Check out the new SpongeBob anime thing. He's selling merch on there. I even bought a shirt. I wanted to support him because he's doing a great job.
The shirts were really cool too. So, all right, next up, I have a little bit more sad news. Unfortunately, our dude who hosted Who Wants to Be a Millionaire through our childhoods, Regis Philbin, passed this week. Shout out to Regis. I loved Who Wants to Be a Millionaire. I don't know if you guys are into game shows, but I was always a big fan, and he was always a very lighthearted, constant presence. So shout out to that dude.
Yeah, I watched Live with Regis and Kelly my entire childhood with my mom, before I would go to school in the morning.
He was pretty much always on the TV in the background whenever my mom was watching television, so... It's sad to see him go, but you know, that's how life is.
RIP, homie. RIP. But next up, we've got some news about something that no one asked for and might be good, but I don't know how I feel about it. You guys give me your thoughts. The Witcher prequel, Blood Origin, is what it's going to be called. It's about the first Witcher, the creation of the first Witcher, which I guess the elves and the humans like combine, like the. I guess they have a child and that's the Witcher. So what do you guys think about them making a prequel when they've only released one season of the show?
I am so sick of things like this happening. I wish they would just stick to the original plot line of the show that's already been doing well and just finish it, or at least continue it before going on and making a prequel. Or like even a
you're not
a side
fan
project.
Of like spinoffs during like
not during
like you don't like the Fear of the Walking Dead kind of deal while the Walking Dead was still going.
No, I don't. I think you can
no CSI New York compared to CSI Las Vegas.
All right, to be fair, I don't follow that, so I'm not sure.
What about Miami or New Orleans?
Oh shit, Miami, that's a whole different story. I'm cool with that.
No, I honestly kind of hear you though. Like, I don't know. I want to see it, but at the same time...
They only have one season.
Don't detract from the show right
now. Why are you going to make a prequel when you only have one season of your of the show that you're going to be basing it off of?
It's a clear money grab, which is what's most upsetting to me. And I just hope it doesn't reduce the quality of the show overall.
Agreed.
Oh, God.
I'll stay optimistic.
Hope they sell some good action figures.
But I'm sick of people doing that. I mean, I could say the same thing for like George R. R. Martin taking on different prequels and side projects instead of just finish your story. Dude.
Yeah, you know that thing I sent you today. It was like freezing cold takes retweeted something. It's like if Winds of Winter is not released by, this is a George R. R. Martin quote. If Winds of Winter is not released by 7/29/2020, then you know the fans can come and take me away and put me in prison or something.
Wait, when?
7/29/2020. So yesterday.
And when did he make? When did he say, "You're under citizen arrest, buddy"?
This is 5 years or this. 3 years ago, maybe?
I think it was 3 years ago. Yeah.
Yeah. Maybe even less time than that. I think it was 2019 the article was from, but I think he said it a while back. So it's time to go. Come, my legions. We will march on Martin's estate.
This is a citizen's arrest.
Citizen's arrest.
Just starve him until he finishes Winds of Winter. you get food every chapter you finish.
His storehouses are stocked. There's no way we can siege his castle.
Oh man. So yeah, I think I'm gonna leave that show open. My opinions are gonna be wide open on it. But yeah, as it stands right now, I'm not happy about it. But I don't want to complain. So we'll see how it plays out. Next up, I wanted to touch on this because I talked a lot about Dark in the past couple weeks. Stephen King gave a shout out to Dark on Twitter. Stephen King, Master of Horror. Yeah, that's right. Watch that show. Giving you another recommendation again. We will be watching it and reviewing it in the future.
At this point, you're just bashing us over the head to watch it.
Watch it! And then last but not least, Trent, why don't you talk about this? I think this is right up your alley, being a lifeguard and living on the
beach. It's also one of my favorite events of the year.
Oh, yes. It's the best. It's the best. We don't have the Olympics this year, so it's going to be even more in the spotlight. But we have Shark Week starting August 9th. We don't know what we're going to do yet for the episode, but we are going to give you a good fucking Shark Week episode. So,
did you see who's hosting it this year?
Yeah, fucking Mike Tyson.
Mike Tyson. Let's go.
I love it.
I love Shark Week. Chris, I remember one summer you and I just sitting in your apartment and taking shots and playing drinking games of Shark Week for like 4 days.
Oh, yeah. That was a good time.
So I have an annual tradition with my neighbor. We watch Shark Week every single year at least one night and just get hammered while watching it. It's so fun. Shout out to Travis.
I almost want to take the week off.
The week off? Hell yeah.
Shark Week is legit. Shark Week is so legit. I will say, though, I don't want them to pull any more BS where they have like a fake shark story that they pass off as real. Like, did you guys see the one where it was like this big ass shark and it was literally swimming vertical?
Yeah, I did see that. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, they always have some bullshit like that.
And I'm just like, yo, I'm already scared. You don't need to be like lying to me. Like, now you're messing with me. And then I can't watch this shit. It's giving me nightmares.
Well, speaking of shark nightmares, there's not another better segue into our Summer of Spielberg segments. The last half of our episode, me, Chris, and Brandon, we're going to talk about individually our favorite. We'll just run them off real quick. Our favorite Spielberg films. And then I think Brandon's going to talk a little bit about the pop culture impact, box office impact of Spielberg's work. And then we've got a fun little game at the end for everybody. So, Chris, why don't you start off and tell us your favorite Spielberg film that's not mine that I was going to say.
I will. One thing I do want to throw out is follow us on social media real quick. Instagram and Twitter at GeekPeakPod, Facebook.com/GeekPeakPodcast. Check us out. We're always posting stuff. That will be where you can find whenever we post new episodes. But back to Spielberg. Also, I want to say the reason we kind of decided we were going to do an episode like this, obviously Spielberg is known for huge summer blockbusters. But then on top of that, with COVID and, you know, theaters closing down, the whole drive-in movie scene has definitely blown up, and Spielberg was back at the top of the box office again very recently. I think, what was that, 3 weeks ago, guys? Mm-hmm. In the past month or so? And it was, you know, like Jurassic Park and Jaws were like the top two movies that people are buying tickets for. So thought that was cool. We wanted to pay homage to one of the greats. But my favorite, honestly, of all time movie is Jurassic Park. So that's just my favorite movie ever. I wanted to be a paleontologist till I was 10. I absolutely love dinosaurs. I think they're so cool.
I think everybody probably has, raise your hand and nobody can see us, but if you wanted to be a paleontologist when you were a kid after watching Jurassic Park, because I know I did until I realized they don't make any money.
It's funny you say that.
Because dinosaurs weren't alive.
In fourth grade, we had a thing asking what we all wanted to be, and I wrote down paleontologist as well, and it was strictly because of Jurassic Park. I think it was right around when Lost World came out.
Oh my God. Yeah, that was that, like, that. I remember watching Jurassic Park for the first time. Like, I was a small child. My parents were watching it, and I had like snuck in behind them and was hiding behind like a pillar at our house. And I was watching, and I just remember the lawyer getting eaten by the T-Rex. Mm-hmm. And I was like, oh my God, like that scarred me. But thank God I watched that as young as I did, because I am obsessed with dinosaurs forever. And also that's one of those like movies that forever is an impact on me. So that's my favorite. What is your favorite, Trent?
Well, I told you not to pick mine before we started. My favorite Spielberg film is also Jurassic Park, but for the purpose of this, I say my second favorite is Raiders of the Lost Ark. So
good choice.
Yeah, I actually was telling you guys beforehand, I had not seen Raiders of the Lost Ark until after I'd already seen Temple of Doom. Temple of Doom mm-hmm. was my first Indiana Jones movie I ever saw, but Raiders is just such a classic action adventure film, and I love Harrison Ford.
I remember the first time I
have to jump in and say,
go ahead.
Sorry. I have to jump in and say, I'm watching Temple of Doom right now. And it's the scene where he's like, oh, Mom Sheba, oh, Mom Sheba, oh, Mom Sheba. And Kalima. He just tore his heart out and it's still beating.
Kalima!
I remember the first time I saw Temple of Doom.
Sorry, go ahead.
That movie scared the shit out of me as a kid.
Fun little fact about Raiders of the Lost Ark. The fun fact about Raiders of the Lost Ark, the scene where he's fighting the guy that looks like a jacked Aladdin with the Arabian sword, that was supposed mm-hmm. to be a crazy, intricate fight scene. And I guess Harrison Ford had the flu or something right before they started shooting that. And so they just improv'd him taking his gun out and shooting the guy, which turns out way better.
It became one of the most iconic scenes of the movie because of that. I love that.
Like, sure.
Okay, I'm not dealing with your fucking shit, dude.
Mm-hmm.
Not today, Satan.
It's definitely an Indiana Jones kind of flippant, just, okay, I'm done with you.
It's the American way.
Brandon?
It's like, why try hard when you can try smart?
So, not to be predictable, but I think my favorite Steven Spielberg movie is also Jurassic Park. But... very, very close second is Jaws.
Oh, I love Jaws. So
I mean, I'm
much.
Watching it currently right now in the background. It's such a good movie. So impactful. And it's something I will watch at least once a summer.
Do we all just have those three in our top three? I know Jaws is my third for sure.
Jaws is number two and my third is Raiders.
Actually, oh man, I forgot about Saving Private Ryan.
Yeah.
Here's the thing about Saving Private Ryan. It's not as digestible. It's not as rewatchable. So if for that fact, I'm going to stick it out of my top three, even though it may be one of his best movies he's ever done. I mean, he won an Oscar for it.
Contentious, but Saving Private Ryan is probably my sixth favorite. And it's following Catch Me If You Can and Hook. And Hook is more of a, all right, listen to me. I know that it's not as good of a movie as Saving Private Ryan, but Hook
has
a very special place in my heart.
Yeah, that one is pure nostalgia.
Yeah.
And I won't fault you for it.
Saving Private Ryan is, like you said, Trent, you put it perfectly. It's an amazing movie. I think it's honestly probably in my top three just because of how like powerful emotionally it is for me.
Mm-hmm.
But at the same time, it's not a movie I can just throw on whenever because it is heavy as hell.
Yeah.
I mean, like you're definitely going to get like you're going to get emotionally drawn in and be distraught by the end of it because you're like, damn, this is just a lot. So for that reason, I think I'm with you. I'm going to push it out of my top three. And I think that it's got to be Indiana Jones. I don't even know which one, though. I'm going to have to think on that.
I didn't on this list that I created for our game later. Do not consider any other Indiana Jones film because there's just it just gets too complicated, especially with because Spielberg also directed Lost World, but not the other Jurassic Park film, the third one. Yeah. So for the purpose of this, we'll just consider Raiders.
Don't go into the tall grass.
Oh, I love that scene. I like your inclusion there of Catch Me If You Can, Brandon. That story of Frank Abagnale is amazing.
So good.
That is such a good movie. Probably one of Christopher Walken's best performances, and he's only in the movie for like 10 minutes.
Mm-hmm. And I've always been a huge Tom Hanks, fan of Leo. So Leo's one of my favorite actors.
So much.
Leo's great. Tom Hanks, his Boston accent in that movie. What does he say? Oh, he has like some joke about Christmas or something on the phone with people. And he does it two or three times in the movie.
I don't recall what it is exactly. But I know
punchline is just punchline is just go fuck yourself.
Yeah. Classic.
And then we've got on here also, I don't know where I'd actually put them, but my boy Tom Cruise, Steven Spielberg's put him a couple of his movies, Minority Report and War of the Worlds.
You know what I'm noticing when we're talking about these movies? There's a distinct lack of love for E.T., which is one of the most iconic movies ever made.
Yeah, E.T.
I like E.T., but every other movie we've said so far, except for maybe Hook.
I kind of feel the same way, honestly. I know E.T. is iconic and I watched it as a kid. I don't think I've even watched it since then, honestly. So it didn't make a huge impact on me, but.
Yeah, I have not seen E.T. since I was under 10 years old.
I think I've seen more parodies of E.T. than I actually have seen E.T.
Probably.
Whether that be through some of the WB like Animaniacs doing parodies on it or Tiny Toons, all those like Saturday morning cartoon shows.
Well, before we just literally start ranking every Spielberg movie, which would take forever. I mean, we had a 3-hour, it seems like, Empire Strikes Back anniversary episode ranking those movies.
Yeah.
Brandon, why don't you just get into a little bit of what you're going to talk about in terms of Spielberg's impact on pop culture and maybe talk a little bit more about the popular parodies?
Sure.
Ooh, please come out of it.
I'm mostly going to be talking about the most parodied and iconic scenes from the most iconic Spielberg movies. That includes Indiana Jones, Jaws, E.T., and Jurassic Park. So let's just start off with Dr. Jones himself. So
Dr. Jones,
easily some of the most iconic scenes are swapping the golden idol for a bag of sand from the original Raiders of the Lost Ark.
Yes.
I mean, that's been done to death in so many different shows.
They have that in the also they the have whole, that.
Like that whole scene getting to the idol.
That scene following into the giant boulder chasing him through the temple to the escape. I mean, how many times has that really been done?
You guys,
that part's so great.
But
I don't know why iconic. I just remembered this. I don't know why I just remembered this, but the Rugrats movie literally copied that scene in its opening.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
It's Tommy Pickles. It's Tommy Pickles playing Indiana Jones. Yeah.
So we've also got the storing of the Ark of the Covenant in a crate when they bring it off at the very end of the movie. Like, what are you guys doing with it? It's being handled by top men. Who? Top men. Like, that's been done a bunch of times, too. Whether that be, I think Family Guy has actually done every single one of these while I'm going down this list looking at them.
A lot of these I've definitely seen.
Yeah, we Family were talking Guy, about American Dad. Brandon's like, Family Guy has literally parodied everything. So
it's true. Another big one, classic line from the movie, why did it have to be snakes?
Oh, yeah,
dude, Yeah, I love his.
Can't forget like, his hate phobia for snakes.
Snakes, big fan.
Let's see, oh well, I have on here for iconic scenes the swordsman getting shot instantly. We already talked about that a little bit, but
dude, that scene is so.
I also have another like, fight scene from Raiders. It's the fight scene where he's fighting the buff German dude next to the plane.
Oh my god, freaking Hans, dude!
And the plane ends up like rotating around, just shredding him up in the propellers. Whew.
Oh yeah, is that the first time that was done in cinema?
I believe like, so.
Yeah, I haven't. As far as I know, I haven't seen anything prior to Raiders.
I've seen it.
I feel like I've seen that in multiple 1990s James Bond films.
I would not be surprised.
Yeah, it's true. That's the ultimate way to kill
from that.
Yeah.
The German or Russian bad guy.
Yeah. That's how you always kill the big dumb idiot. We also have all right, so now we're going to move to Temple of Doom a little bit. We've got Indy rolling under the closing door and quickly turning back to grab his hat from under it right before it closes.
Classic.
Classic scene. We have the Kali Ma human sacrifice. Kali Ma.
I love that part so much. Om Mam Shiva. Kali Ma.
And then finally,
my older brother showed me that. I'm sorry, but my older brother showed me that, and like forever, that is like that's like a call sign to me. you start chanting that, and it's like you're one of my people.
Yeah. It's like doing the Tusken Raider noise. These are truly my people.
That was really good. That was very good. That was weirdly good.
You're welcome. I've been practicing. And then finally, I've got one from The Last Crusade. It's the Holy Grail scene where if you choose the wrong artifact in the room, you quickly age to your death.
Or the whole sticking your arm in something to grab a lever and then it just gets mangled. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So then we have E.T. And I have this was actually voted like one of the most iconic scenes, if not the most iconic scene in film history back in, I think, 2012. But it's the moon cycling scene, mm-hmm. which has also been parodied to death by everything that's ever been owned by Warner Brothers, whether that be Tiny Toons or Animaniacs. But
there are very few things in pop culture where you see a silhouette of something and you know what it is. Mm-hmm. One of them actually is you can see a silhouette of Indiana Jones with the whip and the hat. You know that's Indiana Jones. Another one is that silhouette of them riding with the moon shining, backlighting them. So I agree with that.
I do want to jump back to Indiana Jones for one second. I wanted to throw this little fun fact in. So Steven Spielberg actually said, and I quote, "For me to be able to turn that idea into something with bugs and a little coda where Willie's butt hits the trigger mechanism." And this scene that I'm referring to is the tunnel with all the bugs,
mm-hmm.
where the walls, I guess, are closing in. And the whole shot that you said about him grabbing his hat before the concrete slab closes, Spielberg said that was probably his favorite thing to shoot on that entire film. So like, not only is it iconic, but like clearly it was exactly what he wanted.
Hell yeah. You
know? Like that's serious genius right there.
I mean, when I think of Indiana Jones, that's like one of the first scenes that comes to my mind. It's just so iconic. Anyways, back to E.T. We also have the, of course, the touching of the fingers to heal the wound on Elliot's cut finger after he mm-hmm. picked up the saw blade.
Phone home. I hope we're going to touch on.
Well, we also have E.T. phone home.
Not that that needs mentioning, but
I think everyone knows also, that one.
can we talk about, is it Drew Barrymore who's a little girl in that
yeah.
movie?
Yeah, yes, it is.
Dude. So weird that she went on to have like a really, really successful acting career, and like that was her start, and it's such an iconic movie. Like that's a wild, you know, like sometimes people get in these like really, really huge roles and then like they never do anything ever again, and that's fine because they're forever immortalized, but like that's the end of their career immediately. And it's kind of cool to see that she ended up having a long and prosperous acting career and is still doing movies today.
Yeah, you get in with Spielberg, get you places.
Stevie boy.
So now we got some Jaws parodied in iconic scenes. We have the titular ending, "Smile, you son of a."
I love that.
We have the opening scene where Chrissy is attacked from below. which is honestly one of the most terrifying scenes of any movie, just because it's so visceral feeling, and it's just quiet and there's nothing happening, and then all of a sudden you see her just gasping for air, just that's one of the things that, like, one of the reasons I stay away from the beach on most days.
So I got another fun fact for you guys related to that scene. So did you know that the harness that she, the female actress who's playing, you said her name's Chrissy?
Mm-hmm.
I just know her as the skinny dipper girl in the beginning.
Yeah, that's what I call her.
And did you know that the harness that she had, which attached to her hips underwater, broke her hip in the middle of the filming of that scene? So all of her screaming and stuff is actually her hip has been broken, and now she's being flailed around.
Well, no wonder it sounds so visceral and terrifying, because I guess she was in immense pain. Holy shit.
Yeah,
nuts.
So yeah, that's a really cool fun fact for that film, because like you said, that scene, that's the opening, and it starts so strong. Mm-hmm. Like, you're like, whoa, okay, this movie is intense.
So we also have Quint's Indianapolis speech when the ship sank. 500 men go into them waters.
I remember that being parodied on Master of Disguise with Dana Carvey. You remember that?
I do remember that movie, but I wish I didn't, because that movie is hot garbage.
Oh, you know what?
I want to be a part of the Turtle Club.
That movie was one of the funniest things ever when I was like 7 years old.
We got to rewatch it as adults and talk about it.
I have rewatched it as an adult. I'm not proud of my decisions.
Oh my God. Yeah, I love that scene though. And the Indianapolis, for those of you who don't know, that was a real story in like the World War II. One of the naval ships went down in the South Pacific, and a lot of U.S. sailors got eaten by sharks.
Another great Shark Week documentary. That's one of the better ones, because it's actually a real thing.
Well, okay, so random, but when I was in middle school, we had somebody who lived in St. Augustine who had survived the Indianapolis, and he came and spoke to my class.
Holy shit, that's cool.
It was so awesome.
I can't imagine anything more terrifying. My one goal in life is to not be eaten by anything. So that's putting myself in the most immediate danger in a situation.
One goal, not success.
I don't care about anything else.
I don't want to be.
I just don't want to be eaten.
Someone somewhere on this earth who's like the back of their neck prickled up when you said that. It's like, I'm ready to hunt Brandon.
You and I could not leave more opposite lives, Brandon.
I'm a simple man. I don't want to be eaten.
All right, let's continue.
So we also another iconic scene is singing in the cabin of the boat. Show me the way to go home. I'm tired and I want to go to bed.
Oh God!
A great
also Narragansett.
Yeah,
from that
big shout out to Narragansett. A fine beer.
So cheap, dude.
So cheap. So so tasty. And then we also have, finally for Jaws, we have the quote, you're going to need a bigger boat. I think everyone knows that one.
Dude,
mm-hmm.
I love that.
And so we come to
the
best for last. They did not get a bigger boat. The best for last, Jurassic Park. We have the quote,
so many great things about
I try to keep it kind of short because I could go on and on about Jurassic Park, but we have,
I could quote the whole movie.
Seriously,
life finds a way.
What you call progress, I call the rape of the natural world.
Another iconic scene, one of my favorites, Dennis Nedry getting attacked by the Dilophosaurus.
Oh yes, his screaming, can't forget it.
No.
Also, I know this isn't on your list, or I assume it's not. Hi, I'm DNA.
I don't have that on the list.
I'm dinosaur DNA.
Dinosaurs?
All about John Hammond's like, we got, like, he's like talking about some random guy. He's like, we got this guy to do the voice acting. He's like, okay, dude. Anyways, sorry.
We have the kitchen scene, which goes self-explanatory when the raptors are chasing the kids through the kitchen and they're ducking in and out between pots and different pans and going into the the cupboards to hide, and the raptors running headfirst into them, to the reflections.
I've seen that recently in something that was such a blatant ripoff of that. It wasn't even trying to pay homage to that scene. It was just a complete blatant ripoff. It was an older movie. I'm completely blanking, but that's something that's been ripped off before for sure.
Mm-hmm. I mean, that's one of the coolest scenes in the movie, in my opinion. I love that one.
Yeah, I love the kitchen scene, especially when they lock the one raptor in the freezer.
Yeah.
Loved it.
All right, we got a big one now. The T-Rex's first appearance, and it, whether that be it chomping down on the lawyer on the toilet or looking in through the car window and steaming up the glass.
Okay.
When you gotta go, you gotta go.
They did such a good job of holding back the T-Rex until like halfway through the movie, so that you didn't get to see it until the big reveal, and it made a huge impact, in my opinion.
Also, how many of us were completely adamant that if you don't move, that's like the one dinosaur.
Oh, yeah.
Everybody took away from that movie. If you don't move, it can't see you. Its vision is based off movement.
Yeah, for real.
I have a sneaking suspicion that wouldn't work.
You know what's funny is, I don't know if you're going to mention this one, but whenever Ellie Sattler is driving, or actually no, it's the safari guy. He's driving away, and Ian Malcolm's in the back of the Jeep, and you see the camera.
Objects in
the
mirror, close when they appear.
Yes.
You're talking about that one?
Do you guys?
Yeah.
Yeah. Every time I look in my rearview mirror and I specifically read that, I imagine a T-Rex right there. Like, that has never left me ever. Ever.
It's iconic, dude. I knew exactly where you were going as soon as you mentioned it.
Yeah.
I feel like Jurassic Park made Jeep Wranglers like the most badass cars.
Oh, true. Dude.
Big true.
Like, I forever wanted one, even though it's like not a practical car for me personally. Like, I'm still like, maybe I should just get a Wrangler and put a Jurassic Park decal on it.
So we also have, I got two more. So we have the big reveal, the Welcome to Jurassic Park, which, if you haven't heard the really shitty version of that song that's been used on a bunch of different on, like, meme videos,
like
stuff.
The accordion or something.
Yeah, on the recorder, the like way off pitch, and it goes off key all the time. That is one of the funniest things.
I'm definitely about to jam that as soon as we finish this episode.
And then finally, my personal favorite quote from the movie, clever girl.
I love it.
Yes!
Clever girl.
Dude, okay, so have you guys seen the GIF? It's like a meme version of it, but it's a giraffe. Like, it's a giraffe head that pokes through the tall grass next to him when he's like, hey, dude, I'm going to send that. I'm going to try to post it on our social. So be on the lookout for that, because I love that. It is so funny. It's a GIF, and instead of a Velociraptor, it's a giraffe. It makes me real happy.
That's awesome. Yeah, Jurassic Park is just so good. I mean, you have true horror elements in there, too. Like Samuel Jackson, his hand grabbing Ellie Sattler and then her turning around
It's
gone, not attached to his body. Hold on to your butts.
Dude, there's so many quotes we didn't even talk about. Like, my personal favorite.
Didn't say the magic word.
Yes, yes.
I love that. But I was going to say my favorite is shooter, shooter. And also, Ellie, lock the door locks. Ellie. Like, I literally live for that movie. So I hope that all of you listeners out there are enjoying my passion for Jurassic Park. We could have a full episode just about Jurassic Park.
We probably
just
could.
Quoting it and talking. Is
I mean, how often is it that we're playing games together and we say back and forth each other like clever gal or a variation of that?
Yeah,
so yeah, Jurassic Park, Lord of the Rings, those are my number one movies quoted,
and Batman
hands down.
I won't borrow enough of wine.
I won't borrow another one.
Oh.
So here's what I'll say. We're not going to get into the rest of them, into the meat and bones. But, you know, Saving Private Ryan, we kind of touched on. Catch Me If You Can. Minority Report. Trent, I know you love you some Tom Cruise. Weird movie. Weird concept. Interesting movie. But, like,
I dig
just
it.
Weird. And then Ready Player One, I think we all really like. It's a pop culture clusterfuck. We talked about Hook for the nostalgia. War of the Worlds, I feel like, is a I feel like that's a sleeper. Because I really liked the Tom Cruise remake. I didn't like how it ended necessarily, but I thought the movie as a whole was awesome.
I mean, it ends the way the book ends, pretty much.
Yeah.
So it is what it is. The twist is not... It's definitely not an M. Night Shyamalan twist, but...
The aliens were us the whole time. I wanted them to be badass Americans and solve the problem through being American, which was not a realistic expectation, but I was like, I want America to figure it out and win. It's like, nah.
The best scene in that movie is whenever they get sheltered by the guy that's crazy, and he realizes that that guy's going to get him and his daughter killed, and he has her literally close her eyes, sing a song, and he fucking murders the guy. He like chokes him out with a shovel. Yeah. In the other room.
Dude, the whole monologue that guy has, like, this is no more a war than it is between men and roaches. It's like, Jesus, dude. This guy's definitely about to kill your whole family.
All right. We're going to move on to the game that we have planned at the end. So so what we're doing is it's a Rotten Tomato meter ranking game. So before I looked at all of the... of Spielberg's Rotten Tomato rankings of his films, I did my own guessing, which I do have to pull this up, but we're going to start with Jaws. You guys are going to give me your rankings, and I'm not going to do all of the ones I have written down. It's a lot to keep up with. I'm going to do some of the most popular. So for Jaws, I ranked that. I guessed that the Rotten Tomatoes this happened last week. I got too drunk and I can't talk anymore. The Rotten Tomatoes ranking I gave for Jaws was 90. Where do you guys put it at?
96. I think Jaws is extremely good.
If I had to throw out a Rotten Tostinos rating, I would say probably like 84.
Ooh, Chris, criminally low. 98.
98. Woo! Oh, give it them points.
My expectation was that they would rob that movie. Not that it got accolades.
Jaws is one of the most iconic movies of all time.
All right.
So none of us are really huge fans of E.T. So I'll just tell you that E.T., Jaws and E.T. are the highest ranked Rotten Tomato movies. Yep.
I would have guessed they're the highest ranked. 88 or something.
E.T. is also at 98% on Rotten Tomatoes.
Wow.
I put E.T. at a 93 because I didn't really... I mean, I'm not a huge fan of it, but I just know what it's done for film. Mm-hmm. Also, we're not going to get into Schindler's List because none of us have even really talked about that. That got a 97%. And then Close Encounters of the Third Kind got a 95%. Wow. And I'm the only one here that's seen that one, or at least one of you mentioned that you hadn't seen it before. Yeah.
Yeah. I haven't seen it.
So some of his older shit got really, really good reviews. Okay. Also, by the way, out of his 35 semi movies that he's directed, only three have not been certified fresh. Oh, wow. So he's only had three certified rotten films.
Can I ask which three those are?
You can't.
Well, now we're going to get to that.
Okay, fair enough.
Okay. All right. So let me go with, I'm not going to include my ratings here. Because I already know them. I'm going to give them up to you guys. Let's go Raiders of the Lost Ark. What do you guys think that got rated as? Chris, we'll start with you.
I would say for Raiders, let's go 87 on that.
Okay. Brandon?
Let's give it a 90, just straight up 90.
Okay. I gave it a 95. The Rotten Tomatoes ranking is a 95.
Wow.
Wow. All
right.
Dude, yeah. I am like assuming that they hate on all my favorite movies like they hate on all my new favorite movies, but apparently they love the classics and they fucking
Let me give a huge disclosure to this game. We are not doing this game because we are beholden to Rotten Tomatoes. The three of us, me especially, I disagree with a lot of the shit Rotten Tomatoes does, mainly The Last Jedi. But this is the most universally accepted rankings for films. So that's why we're doing this.
Fair enough.
I think, Maybe we should have gone with IGN. But anyway. All right, let's get to our favorite boys, Jurassic Park.
Ayo.
Brandon.
Well, it can't be as high as 18 now, apparently. So I'm right below it, 95.
95. Okay, yeah, I kind of gave that away with the Jaws and ETV ranked the highest. Okay, so 95, Chris.
So I'm going to throw 93 out there because that was the year I was born, and I believe that's the year it was released. Yeah?
It was released in 1993. Yeah. When it was released in 1993, it was the highest grossing film of all time.
Ooh.
I gave it a 95. Wait, Brandon, you said 95, right?
Yes.
Yeah, I also gave it a 95. It's a 91. It's ranked below 91. Raiders of the Lost Ark.
Wow.
Yeah, that's criminal. It really is criminal.
Wow.
I mean, the fact that Close Encounters of the Third Kind is a 95 and Jurassic Park is a 91 blows my mind.
Jeez.
Yeah, people just get off on hating good shit.
Well, crazy. I'm also wondering, I don't know if these Rotten Tomatoes scores are like... do these ever get updated, or is this just when people in 1993 were they hating on CGI and dinosaur movies? You know what I mean?
It was all animatronics. It wasn't even CGI.
Well, I mean, yeah, it was mostly animatronics.
I guess they did do CGI with the Brontosaurus though.
Yeah.
Yeah. You're right, dude. I don't care. They're wrong. Straight up. That's a hill I'll die on. Jurassic Park is by far the best Spielberg movie, even based on consensus here.
If I'm ever going to give a movie 100, there's only like five to 10 movies in my whole life that I would give 100, and Jurassic Park's one of them.
Yep.
You know? Okay. Let's go with Catch Me If You Can. Brandon.
Ooh. I love Catch Me If You Can. I'm going to say 91.
Okay. Melvin.
I'm going to go 87. By the way, these haven't been my personal ratings of them. It's what I thought they were.
Yeah, this is just a guessing game. These aren't my personal ratings either.
So 87.
I went 90. Wait, did I? Yeah, I went 90. 96.
Wow.
Rated higher than Raiders of the Lost Ark and Jurassic Park.
I love Catch Me If You Can, but that's a stupid rating. Like comparatively, like objectively, that's a dumb rating.
Well, here's the problem with Rotten Tomatoes is when you review the films, you review them independently, and then you go back and you could definitely say like, whoa, wait a second, was this actually better than this other movie? You know what I mean? Yeah, so
very true.
I mean, all of these have been in the 90s so far. Okay, let's go with Brandon's favorite. Let's go with Hook. Well, not favorite, but one of them. Let's go with Hook.
My childhood favorite. Man, I have a feeling that the critics hated on Hook because I know it's not a good movie. We're going to go with a solid 63.
Okay. Chris?
I'm going 82.
I wrote 80, so you and I are on the same boat. Hook is one of Spielberg's three stinkers.
Oh, my God.
I knew it. I knew it.
rated rotten. It is, in fact, his lowest rated film he's ever directed. 28%.
Oh, that is criminal. Christ. It does not deserve that. It does not deserve dear that. That God. Is messed up.
That film needs to be banished, apparently.
Oh, yeah. It is indeed messed up.
Incorrect. I demand a recount.
I disagree. Okay, let's go with so we've already said Schindler's List. That's the one Spielberg won an Oscar for. We'll go with his second Oscar winning film, Saving Private Ryan. What is Chris Melvin, the Rotten Tomato meter?
I'm going to have to say for this one, it's got to be a 95.
Okay, Brandon?
94.
I gave it a 97. And Chris, this is another, you know, just example of why the tomato meter is broken.
Oh, no.
It's got a 93%.
Okay.
Below... But it won an Oscar for best film, yet it's below Raiders, Catch Me If You Can, Jaws, and E.T.
Dude. I think it belongs below two of those.
It's just criminal.
I just don't understand how you give it. Yeah, you give it an Oscar, but yeah, whatever.
Those are some serious rotten tostinos. That's all I'm saying.
All right, we're gonna go with the Tom Cruise films, and then we're gonna go with two honorable mentions, and we'll finish this off. So, of Minority Report and War of the Worlds, I don't want your rankings. I want to know which ones you think were ranked higher.
I think that War of the Worlds was definitely ranked higher.
Okay, Brandon?
I'm going to go Minority Report. I think Minority Report's a better movie.
I won't give my opinion here. Minority Report was ranked 90% fresh on Rotten Tomatoes. War of the Worlds was 75%.
Hey,
you got to be shitting me too, because that means Minority Report's one. You said Jurassic Park was 93 or 91?
Jurassic Park is 91.
Yeah, so Minority Report is 1 point difference from Jurassic Park, which is objectively, Minority Report's objectively not even a good movie. Like, you,
hold on, hold your horses.
I like it, but I'm just saying that would not be a movie that would come up in a conversation of, hey, what's in your top 10 favorite movies, or even the top 10 best movies that you've seen.
Okay, all right, Chris, I'll agree with you on that if you take back your statement that Minority Report is objectively not a good movie.
Okay, that's fair.
Okay, all right,
but the fact that it's not the fact that it is not lower than Jurassic Park is. Yeah, there's a fury within me right now.
Your outrage is justified. Again, this is also this is all just a sleight of hand from me campaign to get rid of Rotten Tomatoes.
there's too much politics on there anyways. Shut it down.
They've betrayed Jurassic Park, and that is something I will not stand for.
Okay. Lincoln. Also, I just love that in Hot Tub Time Machine, one of the standards of time is Lincoln. He's like, wow, you did the full Lincoln, because it's such a long fucking movie. Lincoln, go ahead and give me your ratings, boys. Brandon.
Okay, so Lincoln is an incredible movie. It is long, but it's got one of the best actors of all time in it, Daniel Day-Lewis, 94.
Okay, Melvin.
Dude, honestly, at this point, it's got to be higher than Jurassic Park, because apparently every fucking movie is. So I'll say 90 fucking two.
It is. Actually, let me see. What did I rank this one at? It's a 89.
89. Okay.
Thank God.
Yeah.
Finally, there's some
I ranked it very lower. I ranked it at an 81 because I was bored. I was fucking bored.
Really?
Yeah, I haven't seen that one actually. Yeah, I need to catch that. I heard Daniel Day's performance was phenomenal.
Mm-hmm. It was. All right, Ready Player One. If the Geek Peak was a movie, that would be the movie that we are.
Yeah, for sure.
You guys have both seen it, right?
I have.
I'm a big fan of that movie. I think it's really fun. The book is great too. For those of you who have not read it, it's definitely worth the read. It goes even more pop culture-y. Video games, movies, more stuff, deeper, more intricate. It's really good.
All right, Chris, ranking.
I would say, honestly, I would give that an 87.
Okay. Brandon?
I wasn't super hot on it. 78.
I gave it a 75. It's ranked at a 72. Uh-huh. I think that's underrated.
That's kind of low.
I gave it a 75 because I thought it would get a little bit of hate. I would personally put it at like an 80 for sure. I mean, it's definitely a B movie. It doesn't deserve a C minus.
Yeah, mm-hmm. I agree with that. I don't think it's like the best movie in the world. I'm like about over Rotten Tomatoes and their BS though.
So what you're saying is we're not doing this game again?
No, I'm pissed about it. It's like every movie that I'm actually really into, it's like, sorry, that's going to be in the low 90s at best. It's like, what is 100?
Tell me, actually, that movie's bad. Movie. Sorry.
Yeah. Like,
Chris, you want to know what's going to really piss you off? You want to know one of the things that's rated 100 on Rotten Tomatoes? Oh, Toy God. Story 3.
I thought you were about to say, hey, fucking Last Jedi.
I like Toy Story 3.
It's not The Last Jedi.
I was like, if you tell me The Last Jedi is rated 100, I'm going to have to go ahead and just delete my internet.
all right guys, we've run a little long here. Last comments before we hop off for the evening.
Be good to each other. I love you guys. Thanks for listening to us, and share us with all your friends if you enjoy us.
Yeah, please show us to your friends. Appreciate all of you guys for sticking it out with us. And the one other thing I'll say is Om Shiba Kalima.
Let us know your favorite Spielberg films. Share us with your friends. All right. I think that's it, boys. We're going to climb off from this mountaintop. We will see you guys next week on the latest episode of the Geek Peak.
Deuces.